Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We'll start by talking with author Gary Grossman about his great novel, Red Chaos. Then we'll talk with author Joe Giorello about Great Battles for Boys. And I'll shoot the bull with Air Force veteran Warren Hutchison. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Gary Grossman. Gary, you've been an author. You've been writing all kinds of stuff. So one, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here with you, Colonel.
How did you get into writing? Is this something that just happened or?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I remember when I graduated college at Emerson College, one of the first thoughts I had was, thank goodness I'll never have to write again. Well, that didn't turn out real well. Well, maybe it turned out real well. It didn't turn out as I expected, because soon after that, I was writing documentaries for a local TV station in Boston, and then turned that into looking at television history with a few books on classic TV shows and things that you and I grew up on, like The Adventures of Superman, that TV show, and the history of Saturday morning TV. And from there, I went into newspaper work. I was a columnist. Obviously, you can see I didn't follow my own experience of not writing again. I became a newspaper columnist in Boston for a couple of the different newspapers, then moved to California, worked in television nonstop doing documentaries, service and information shows, lots of work for the History Channel. But to get to your question really about novels, my business partner and I were in New York City pitching to the History Channel. And I remember the day exactly because somebody in the meeting said, do you think, at the History Channel, do you think we're running out of history? And I thought, oh my God, how could anybody say that? Well, what they were really saying is that they were thinking about putting their toe into the reality TV waters. But I said, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? That was September 10th, 2001.
Oh my goodness.
So 2 days later, Rob Weller, my business partner, and I, for Weller Grossman Productions, began driving out back to California. And that's when I started thinking about writing novels, political thrillers. My dad was in law enforcement, my mom in politics, and it just started happening at that point. And here I am today now on the, I don't know, umpteenth book with a political background and historic background, and now a great partner in Ed Fuller with Red Chaos.
Yeah, and you also started off in radio too, didn't you?
I did. How can you tell? I did in upstate New York, the station WHUC in Hudson, New York, a small town station. And I was a big rock announcer in those days, but we also did, I was Country Cousin Gary on a Hayloft Jamboree and Polka Time. And, you know, we did everything. And I absolutely loved it. And now promoting the books, I get to use this instrument of mine again, you know?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. And your partner for this, Ed Fuller, he's a Army guy, isn't he?
He sure is. And I will tell you a couple of things about Ed. I met Ed Fuller through a James Bond connection. Bruce Feirstein, who wrote the first three Pierce Brosnan James Bond movies, was walking his dog one day out in L.A. where we live. We were neighbors, fairly close to one another. I was walking our dog, and he said, Gary, I have this guy for you to meet. A former officer in the Army, served in Vietnam, was in Germany, most recently the president of Marriott International. And he wants to work with somebody co-authoring a book, maybe a series of books. So I thought, well, I write these books on my own, but I don't know. And he said, Gary, you have to meet with him. I did. And within 30 seconds, Dennis, within 30 seconds, I realized that Ed Fuller was as much in the anti-terrorism business as the hotel business. As an international hoteler, an executive, he had to get his team out of Cairo at the fall of Mubarak, out of Tripoli when Gaddafi fell. His hotels were blown up in Jakarta and his Marriott and Ritz hotels. And he had to have contacts with, as I asked him, the CIA, the NSA. I asked him specifically who he had on speed dial. And he said, let's see how our relationship goes over time. But we began working on the first book with Red Hotel, the second Red Deception, and now Red Chaos, all really drawn from tomorrow's headlines as much as today's.
Wow. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Arthur Gary Grossman about his challenging novel, Red Chaos. So Red Chaos is the third novel in a series, the Red Hotel series. Do I remember it right?
That's correct. You've got that right. And what Red is not so much Russia, but it does overlap a bit. Our stand-in for Vladimir Putin is a guy who will look very familiar to Putin. It's Nikolai Gorshkov. And like Putin, he, ever since the Berlin Wall fell, wanted to rebuild the empire, not so successful, but certainly very powerful, the Soviet Union, get back the satellite nations. And as we're looking at today, Ukraine, that's certainly one of the areas that he wants, among others. But also, interesting thing about the real-life Russia today that works into Red Chaos is that Russia's very happy with global warming, with climate change. Why? Because it's melting the ice in the Arctic. And what does that mean to the, a butterfly flying in China? Well, in fact, it does in China, because the Northern Sea Route is basically open now because of Russia's, I think, 36 icebreakers, a couple of them nuclear-powered icebreakers against our two. Why is that important? Well, because oil is being shipped from Russia to China. China is Russia's largest buyer. China's money is helping fund Russia's wars, plural. And that's the subtext of Red Chaos that still involves a hotel element, because our hero, Dan Reilly, is the kind of person that Ed Fuller is and was in his job in real life. Somebody who is working with governments all across the country, hearing things, talking to the right people, figuring it out, and trying to do the right thing.
You know, I sort of guessed that there was some parallel between the hero and Ed. And now you confirmed for me that I guessed right.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, Colonel, I write from the comfort of my computer. I have the internet at my fingertips, and talking with you, I can see I could call you and find out if I'm on the right track on stories. And I have people in the White House and State Department that I can reach. But Ed's the real deal. He's been there. He's been under fire in the Army, and he's been under fire in the hotel business. And all to protect us in this country and his guests at his hotels. So given the choice, I'm happy staying in the comfort of my computer. Yeah,
I've tried both. You're smart.
Thank you.
Ed, we're about out of time. How can listeners buy a copy of Red Chaos? It's an awesome book. It's hard to put down once you pick it up.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Well, we always say support your local booksellers in your area, brick and mortar people, but it's also online at Amazon and Barnes and Noble and other online sources. You can reach us. You can reach Ed Fuller and myself at www.redhotel.com. That's redhotel.com. Hope you can post your reviews on Amazon and online, or write us through redhotel.com. And the fourth book is in the works, Red Ultimatum. So love everybody's reaction to us. It's honestly an exciting read that's going to, it's drawn from reality that has happened. Some of it hasn't happened. We like to say we think the unthinkable and look for the unknowable.
That makes sense. Ed, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your really interesting books that you've written. And I'm sure listeners can just look up Gary Grossman on Amazon or something and see all the stuff you've written.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Colonel. Great being here with you, and God bless America.
Amen. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Joe Giorello. Joe's an American patriot who, among other things, has taken it upon himself the task of helping young boys like to read. Without any doubt, that's something our nation really needs. We all need to be and stay educated. That doesn't mean in the classroom. We get that education in the classroom or in real life. Anyway, reading's important. Welcome to the show, Joe. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Joe, I know that you are not a vet personally, but I think your son is, others in the family?
Oh, yes. It goes back ways. My dad was in the 15th Air Force, World War II, and my Uncle Jimmy served in the Army, infantry. He was, matter of fact, he was in Bastogne, fought in Bastogne. And my younger son, Nico, is currently serving with the Marine Corps.
Okay, I understand. How about you? What have you done in life? What kind of jobs have you had? What do you do?
Well, multiple jobs, but I guess the main last 15 years or so, I've been in sales and selling different type of product, mostly industrial. And from sales, I got to the situation where I guess it falls right into the scenario where my younger son, being Nico, was starting to have trouble with reading and not wanting to read. And that's kind of led into this whole project, which was really my wife was the key to this whole scenario.
That makes sense to me. Mothers tend to be a little more aware of what their kids are doing, particularly in the reading and indoor type of things. And since my wife was a reading teacher, I'm very aware of that. But certainly when you notice that, particularly your kid, that's usually what gets most people's attention, isn't doing something they need to be doing or is doing something they shouldn't be doing, you want to get on that and in a reasonable way that will produce the right result. So you and your wife noticed that in your son. How did you come up with the idea of your books? Where did that come from?
Well, again, I got to tell you, you probably should be interviewing my wife. She was the key person in this. She was, first of all, let me go back a little bit. She homeschooled both the boys, my older son, Daniel, and my younger son, Nico. Nico was more the problem child. He, you know, Daniel grew up just amazing. It was like, oh my God, if having children like this, we'll have 30 of them. He'd read books and just love to read and very quiet, attentive. And then Nico came along and took those same books and used them for target practice, so like throw them across the room and stuff. And being homeschooled, my wife was right in it. And she realized, you know, hey, there's differences. And he really didn't care to read. And at the same time, with this homeschool projects going on, there was a co-op that set up where I'm not sure if you know how that works, but homeschools, they have get areas or places or buildings where they can get large families together if there's enough of them. And they have school. They have like a schoolhouse almost, you could say. So they'd show up there, the moms who were teaching their sons, and they would volunteer. And mostly, I would say 95% were women who would volunteer to teach. And again, my wife was there. And the problem was there wasn't a lot of men teaching at that point. And Nico, just by me talking about war, as far as battles go, I was a history nut as far as like World War II was one of the things I was really just could not believe how brave and how amazing our guys were fighting in this war. And I would tell Nico, we'd start talking about it and I would tell him about it. And he was like, he'd suck it up and he'd start telling my wife all about the same stories in the battles. And Sabella, my wife, said, you know what? Why don't you write some battles, some stories, and let us see if he starts reading them, and kind of worked out. He was really interested. And I guess to cut to the quick, it went from there to other moms hearing about it. And then it led to the next phase, which was, why don't you teach the homeschools? And I said, absolutely not. I wasn't going to do it. I said, no way am I going in there. And then, well, my wife being my wife and, you know, knowing it really, I guess, had to be done, I said, okay, let's do it. But I did have one caveat. I said, I don't want little girls in the class. I don't want girls in the class. This is just for boys. There's enough girl stuff out there. Let's get these guys to be men and let them understand that there's a difference. So that's what they did. The actual co-op actually accepted that. And I started teaching. And I started teaching, I think the first few classes, the first one was on World War II. I broke it down into, since there was so much, the Europe and Pacific. And for some reason, it really took off. The women gave me all the little wild men, because the teachers that they had, they were like, well, you know, they not listen, I guess is a nice way to say it. And from there, I just started my class with Pledge of Allegiance. They had to do the pledge. And if they didn't do the pledge, you know, my rules, my class, they weren't allowed in the class. They had to stand up, and we'd have to say freedom isn't free after the pledge. And I explained to them, you know, after a while they knew it, but new people in the class, new kids would come in, I'd explain that. And then we'd go over our battles. And then we, at the end of the class, or sometimes in the beginning, I'd say a quick prayer. And then we'd say, freedom isn't free. And they'd go on their way, give them a homework assignment, and that would be it. And fortunately, the classes grew and grew. And we always had, like, I guess, for lack of word, like a standing room. Our classes were full all the time. So
that's awesome. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Joe Diorello about great battles for boys. Joe, that's awesome. You and your wife and your community saw a need and met it. You were able to step in and you found something that worked for the boys. And I presume that you are publishing these books now. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes, we're self-published. Yeah.
Okay. We're about out of time. How can listeners buy these books? How can they access them, learn about them, buy the books, whatever?
Well, if it's okay with you, my wife's the manager and runs the show. If it's okay with you, Denny, she'll tell you real quick.
Yes, indeed. Welcome.
And this is Sabella, my wife.
Yes.
Hello, Colonel. I'm an author, and I had a publisher who said, boy, those notes that your husband's doing for those classes, they were very extensive. I mean, he was really digging into military history and explaining terms to the boys and strategy and what's a pincer maneuver, all these things. And my publisher had been in the service and said, you should really turn those into books. So we did. And we have a whole team. It's not just the two of us. When we say we're self-published, it's really independently published. We have a publishing house. And so we started with those first World War II books, and they almost, I think, immediately shot to number one on Amazon for children's military history. And since then, so there are now 8 books in the series. They're available on the website, which is greatbattlesforboys.com, and on Amazon. And we also offer, for teachers out there who need classroom resources, we offer free ebook and audio for any classroom in America or any homeschooler that needs resources. What we found, this is sort of off, this goes with the boys with reading. One of the things we found, if boys listen to an audiobook at the same time that they read along with the text, their comprehension and vocab skyrockets.
Wow.
And the reason that's important is in every state in America, at every grade level, boys are behind girls in reading comprehension and vocab. And each year, that gap widens. And especially with the lockdown, it widened even more. And of course, video games, computers, so forth. Boys just aren't reading. And what's been so rewarding is to see these little boys like our Nico, it was like lighting a fuse. As soon as it was action adventure that actually happened, and there were real heroes, not basketball players, or not that there's anything wrong with that, but these are genuine heroes, to read about John Bazelon, these people.
Well, I just wanted to say, again, a key thing, we do have people who go, oh, you're a warmonger and this and that. And again, just to make the point across, this is really for, there's a couple of reasons. It's to get boys to read, not to be talk about war, not talk about battle, but it's the key that opens the door to reading. And another thing I think is essential with all the scenarios that are going on in today's world, it brings a family together. These young boys are now sitting with their dads and their moms at a table instead of like looking at a phone or watching TV, and they're talking about these amazing people and they're talking about strategy and heroes. So that was the other point. Bring families together, getting these boys to read. It's an opening knowledge for them.
Thank you, Joe. One more time. What's the website?
GreatBattlesForBoys.com.
There it is. Joe, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. Thank you for the way you're helping ensure that our nation stays great. You and your wife and your family are awesome patriots. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll shoot the bull with Air Force veteran Warren Hutchison. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or a comment on Facebook. It's a pleasure now to shoot the bull with Air Force veteran Warren Hutchison. He retired as a sergeant, a full career. Welcome to the show, Warren. Glad to have you join us.
Glad to be here, Dan. Glad to be here.
Start by telling us about your Air Force service. When and why did you join? What did you do? Where did you serve? What were some of your favorite assignments?
Okay. Well, I joined the Air Force in 1975, when a friend came home from college and we decided that we need to get out of St. Louis. So I went to basic training. I was in the 3701 squadron. From basic, I went cross base to security police school. And from there, I went to my first duty station, which was George Air Force Base in South California. While I was a security policeman back in, I think it was August of 76, you had that tree-cutting incident in the DMZ.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I got my first visit out of the country. I was deployed to Daegu, Korea, as a backup force at the backup command post if something had actually tipped off.
Do you want to review for a minute that tree-cutting thing so the listeners know what you're talking about?
Yes. In the DMZ, there was an incident where there was a tree in the militarized zone, and it was sort of blocking a U.S. lookout or something. So they sent two Army officers in to cut the tree down, and the Koreans told them if they did, they would do something bad, and they did. They went in and killed the two Army officers, and that escalated into the Fu Manchu incident. Yeah.
So suddenly you're there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I was in Daegu. I was in Southern Korea, and was only there for about 45 days, and things kind of went back to normal, and so we were sent home. So it was a good vacation, and like I said, it was my first real trip out of the country other than Mexico or Canada.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that was awesome for me.
You know, that's for everybody, at least everybody I know, certainly true for me. That's a major experience, and you can't really be ready for it, but you can sure enjoy it and grow from it.
Yeah, that was, like I said, it was my first time going across the ocean, and it was definitely my first time going across the ocean with the M16 stuck between my legs.
I take it you went in a military aircraft of some kind?
Yes, we did. We did go on a military aircraft.
Because I couldn't imagine you on a commercial airliner with a M16 between your legs.
No, I think if I'm not mistaken, I believe we went out of Travis.
Okay, yeah. The two times I went to Vietnam, I went out of Travis, so that'd be a logical place.
Yeah.
Okay. Beyond that, what'd you do?
Okay. As a matter of fact, I got out of security police and went into personnel. So in 1978, I left Georgia Air Force Base and went to Travis. I spent 3 years in Northern California, Travis Air Force Base, and I worked in the personnel readiness unit. Basically, I was responsible for setting up and all deployments off the base, whether it was real world or just exercise. I did that for 3 years, and then I had my third assignment, and that's where my fun began. I went to Lackland, become a drill instructor.
Oh, ho, ho.
I went to the 3723rd Basic Military Training Squad. I did 4 years as a drill instructor. I probably put through about, I'd say about 20 flights, 50 people, you know, 50 new trainees. After that, my 4 years, I got a break and took a year and went to Osan, Korea, which was great because I had the opportunity to spend a year stationed with my younger brother, who's also in the Air.
Oh, good.
So we spent about 10 months at a time together in Osan.
Was your younger brother also in the Air Force?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I had talked him into going in right after he graduated high school. So he was in before I was.
Okay.
And he also retired too, with both of you.
Okay.
After Korea, I went back and did another 3 years as a drill instructor, but this time at the 3706 squadron. And I think I probably put through about 15 flights there.
Were you nice to all those people?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Air Force is a kind of gentleman, but, you know, we have our moments. It was actually the pretty cool thing about that is, to this day, I get contact from guys that I put through basic training because they see me on Facebook.
Okay.
And I've actually even had phone call conversations with them. Apparently, at the end of the training, I turned out to be human after all.
Well, that's how it's supposed to be, really, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
You're like a big brother. You pick on them for a while, and then when they get their act together, you're your brother.
Right. The beginning is to get them to understand that you're helping them become part of the team. And usually about halfway through basic training, they start understanding and they start working. When they start working as a team, you as a drill instructor kind of step back and watch them grow. And then by the time they're graduating, you should be communicating with them like they're going to be your brother in arms because that's what they're going to be. If you let them do basic, you're saying that they're eligible to be your brothers in all. So you
That's
should
right.
be treating them that way by the time they graduate.
Well said. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Air Force Sergeant retired Warren Hutchison. Okay, so you picked on some more people and helped them grow and mature and become good troops, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay, after Lackland, I went to Cannon Air Force Base. And again, still in personnel. But while I was there, of course, the Gulf War started. And I was deployed to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Oh, so you saw another part of the world.
Yes, right.
A little different than Korea, right?
A lot different, a whole lot different than Korea. The tensions were a lot, even though my first deployment to Korea was tense, the tensions were even higher when we went to Riyadh.
And that so, I believe, yep.
Yeah. And so after Riyadh, of course, I went back to Cannon. And from Cannon, I had what I would consider my best assignment. I got a remote assignment to Cairo, Egypt.
Wow.
Yeah. And I spent 12 months in Cairo in a 6-man unit, and we lived in town. So it was by far the most interesting assignment I ever had. Because we did the travels, you know, all the sites up and down the Nile, all the, you know, the historical sites that we could do. And we did all of that. So that was pretty cool.
What language did you speak while you were over there?
English. Most of the people spoke English. And believe it or not, most of them would prefer you to speak English because a lot of them were trying to work on that.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I worked with Muslims and got a chance to talk to some of them because we have different ones working directly for us. And they talked about their culture and some of the things that they didn't like about their culture. And, you know, but it was great when I first got there, but it started getting kind of hairy near the end. I think tensions were starting to flare between the U.S. and Egypt. So by the time I left, it was a great time, but it's time to go. Then I went to my last duty assignment, which was Scott Air Force Base. And from there, I wound up spending 6 months in insular Turkey in the 10th city, Operation Provide Comfort, which was a follow-up to the Gulf War. Then I came back from that and retired.
Okay. So you're a happy veteran. You served honorably and well and enjoyed it, and you're fully retired now, and life is good. Is that a fair summary?
That's an excellent summary.
And I would also guess that you're my brother-in-arms and a proud American.
Most definitely so, on both accounts.
Warren, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. I bet all the recruits you took care of, most of them are thanking you too. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me. Have a nice one.
Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag, then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. About 60 this time. I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. Troops, America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it is mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Please do send your thoughts to me at danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or by Facebook. Skip, what's the first one this week?
Well, Colonel, Army vet Pete really liked the Thanksgiving show, but he doesn't understand how the military justice system works or doesn't work. I think that's two of us, Colonel. Why don't you explain it to us?
Well, Pete, it usually works, in my opinion, but when it fails, it really fails. I've seen it go both ways.
And Sue Ellen is a Navy vet and a Navy mom, and she'll be rooting for Navy during this weekend's football game. Be careful, Colonel.
We're on opposite sides this weekend, Sue Ellen. Beat Navy.
We're on opposite sides, but we're always on the same side, especially when the bullets start flying, right, Colonel?
Well, just during that 3-hour game is the only time. Now it's time for military history. Take us there, bro.
On 16 December 1773 in Boston Harbor, a group of Massachusetts colonists disguised as Mohawk Indians boarded 3 British tea ships and dumped 342 chests of tea into the harbor. The Midnight Raid, popularly known as the Boston Tea Party, was in protest of the British Parliament's Tea Act of 1773, a bill designed to save the faltering East India Company by greatly lowering its tea tax and granting it a virtual monopoly on the American tea trade. Many colonists viewed this as another example of taxation tyranny. When 3 tea ships arrived in Boston Harbor, the colonists demanded that the tea be returned to England. After Massachusetts Governor Hutchinson refused, Patriot leader Samuel Adams organized the Tea Party with about 60 members of the Sons of Liberty, his underground resistance group. The British tea dumped in Boston Harbor that night was valued at some $18,000. Parliament, outraged by the blatant destruction of British property, enacted the Coercive Acts in 1774. They closed Boston to merchant shipping, established formal British military rule in Massachusetts, made British officials immune to criminal prosecution in America, and required colonists to quarter British troops. The colonists subsequently called the First Continental Congress to consider a united American resistance to the British. The result was war.
It sure was. And that's one of the reasons when they activated it, I joined the Tea Party group in the United States. On the 16th of December, 1944, during World War II, when the Anglo-Americans closing in on Germany from the west and the Soviets approaching from the east, Adolf Hitler ordered a massive attack against the Western Allies. This was the Battle of the Bulge. The German counterattack out of the densely wooded Ardennes region of Belgium took the Allies entirely by surprise, and the experienced German troops wrought havoc on the American line, creating a triangular bulge 60 miles deep and 50 miles wide along the Allied front. Fog prevented the unleashing of the Allied air superiority, and for several days, Hitler's desperate gamble seemed to be paying off. However, the embattled Americans kept up a fierce resistance, buying time for a three-point counteroffensive. Fighting was particularly fierce around the town of Bastogne, where the 101st Airborne Division and part of the 10th Armored Division were encircled by the Germans within the bulge. On December 22nd, the German commander demanded the Americans surrender or die. U.S. Major General Anthony McAuliffe prepared a typed reply that read simply, "To the German commander, nuts," from the American commander. The Americans who delivered the message explained to the perplexed Germans the one-word reply was translatable as, "Go to hell." Heavy fighting continued at Bastogne, but the 101st held on. On December 23rd, the skies finally cleared over the battle areas, and the Allied air forces inflicted heavy damage on the German tanks and transport. On December 26th, Bastogne was relieved by elements of General Patton's Third Army. Germany's last major offensive of the war had cost them 120,000 men, 1,600 planes, and 700 tanks. The Allies suffered some 80,000 killed, wounded, or missing in action, with all but 5,000 of these casualties being Americans. It was the heaviest single battle toll in U.S. history.
And on September 2, 1945, aboard the USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay, General Douglas MacArthur signed the Instrument of Japanese Surrender on behalf of the victorious Allies, thus ending World War II. Before the economic and political reforms the Allies devised for Japan's future could be enacted, however, the country had to be demilitarized. Step one in the plan to reform Japan entailed the demobilization of Japan's armed forces and the return of all troops from abroad. Japan had had a long history of its foreign policy in being dominated by the military. Step two was the dismantling of Shintoism as the Japanese national religion. The Allies believed that serious democratic reforms and a constitutional form of government couldn't be put into place as long as the Japanese people looked to an emperor as their ultimate authority. Hirohito was forced to renounce his divine status, and his powers were severely limited. He was reduced to little more than a figurehead, and not merely religion, but even compulsory courses on ethics, the power to influence the Japanese population's traditional religious and moral duties, were wrenched from the state control as a part of a larger decentralization of all power. It worked.
It did work. You know, it worked in World War II. We did that in Japan. We did something similar in Germany. But when we won in Iraq, we didn't do it, and it didn't work. There might be a lesson here.
Well, I think the Japanese got us like 20 years later with transistor radios, right? They flooded the market.
Well said. And on 12 December 1950, during the Korean War, the 1st Marine Division closed into Hung Nam, having cut its way through 6 Chinese divisions, killing approximately 20,000 of the enemy on the way to the sea from the Chosin Changnyin Reservoir. Legend has it that the division commander, Major General O.P. Smith, supposedly characterized the operation with, "Retreat? Hell, we're just attacking in a different direction." I think that's what he thinks. You're a jarhead, Skip.
Hey,
what do you think?
That's what I was taught in boot camp, Colonel.
then it must be true.
Oh, those Marines can coin a phrase. We can't read and write, but we sure talk a good game.
Well said.
And on 13 December 2003, after spending 9 months on the run, former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein was captured.
Saddam's downfall began on March 20, 2003, when we led an invasion force into Iraq to topple his government, which had controlled the country for over 20 years. Saddam went into hiding soon after our invasion, and his government soon fell. 5 months later, on December 13, our soldiers found him hiding in a 6 to 8 foot deep hole 9 miles outside his hometown of Tikrit. The man, once obsessed with hygiene, was found to be unkempt, with a bushy beard and matted hair. He did not resist. A soldier at the scene described him as a man resigned to his fate.
Well, he had plenty of time in that hole that he was hiding in to think about that. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Go there, Skip. Take us there.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a Patterson, California woman defended her husband when an intoxicated intruder broke into their home and attacked him. Around 10 p.m., a heavily intoxicated 22-year-old man walked up to the home and tried to force his way inside. The 45-year-old husband confronted the intruder and attempted to prevent him from entering the house through the front door. The two locked into a struggle, prompting the 50-year-old wife to run upstairs and retrieve a revolver, which he had just purchased the day before. Going back downstairs and with both men still struggling, the wife fired on the intruder in defense of her embattled husband. Her fire struck the man and ended the assault. When police arrived, they found him dead from his wounds. The husband also suffered some injuries from his fight with the intruder, but they were listed only as minor.
Colonel, you know, what I think is he probably tracked mud onto her clean carpet.
That
was
done
the
it.
Last straw.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Never do that to a woman.
Amen, brother.
All right. Well, Colonel, this husband and wife team did a pretty good job defending themselves. However, there are a few improvements that you can make should you ever find yourself in a situation like this. First, reinforce all your doors. It takes on average 5 seconds to break down your front door. Usually, the home invader kicks it or drives his shoulder through it one time and the door casing, made of half-inch pine, splinters and gives way. Replace those 3/4-inch hinge, striker plate, and deadbolt screws with 3 to 6 inch screws. Now they have to strike the door multiple times, creating lots of noise. It also gives you plenty of time to get armed and be waiting for them behind cover before they break in. This also gives you time to call 911 and get the police dispatched to the scene. Calling the cavalry is always a good idea. Second, most people store their self-defense gun upstairs in the master bedroom. And that makes sense from a particular point of view. It's where you sleep and you want the gun available to you during the night. But here's the problem. Most home invasions occur during the day between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Because of this, I highly recommend you store multiple guns throughout the home, securely locked and loaded in gun safes. Some people think this is excessive, but I don't, simply because you don't know where or when the criminal will break into your home. And where are you going to be when the invasion occurs? I have 3 levels to my home, and I use them all on a daily basis. In this case, the wife left her husband to fight off a man less than half his age while she went upstairs to get her gun. I'm sure she didn't want to leave him there, but she had no choice. In my own home, I keep a loaded gun in a gun safe on each level of my home. No matter the situation, I can get to my gun when needed in less than 5 seconds. That will work for you as well. All in all, this couple did a great job defending themselves and their home. The man fought a delaying action, giving his wife time to get the firepower, and the woman made a great shot under pressure without hitting her husband. Frontlines of Freedom salutes this brave couple on a job well done.
It's a good thing this didn't happen a week earlier. She wouldn't have had a pistol.
That's true, Colonel.
So there's a message there. Get armed now and trained. Our movie of the month is Words of Wisdom from Admiral McRaven. It's an amazing movie. The speech is awesome. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom to go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month. I'd really appreciate getting your comments. Email them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Colonel Chris Colenda will discuss how we should be treating veterans right. Then retired General Arnold Panaro will look back at 2022 and forward at 23, and will review the Army-Navy football game. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud Americans. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. It'd be a great Christmas gift.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.